I mean, how many times have you seen Dances with Wolves? 100, 200? Oh, jeez. You have seen it that many times, haven't you?
Hallie, we're like twins.
People never seen an Indian do stand-up comedy before, you know? Like, for so long, you probably thought that Indians never had a sense of humor, you know? We never thought you were too funny either.
Hey, welcome back or to Twindigenous.
Hi there, hello.
How are ya?
I'm doing good. How are you?
That was rhetorical, but yeah,
oh,
great.
What?
No,
that's
no,
it's not a rhetorical question.
It was truly I thought my tone and inflection implied that it was merely a formality, but I guess you weren't picking up on that. Anyway, great. I'm doing well. I'm a little tired because I've been working around the clock, make that money, pay these bills. But other than that, I'm glad to be back for episode 2.
Yeah, so am I. So I'll let everybody know who I am. I am Kara Morrison, and you are?
I'm Kaylee Morrison. I see you have a dog with you. Not just any dog, your dog.
Yeah, not a random dog, a dog that belongs to me. Yeah, I hope he stays quiet and behaves himself. He's a hyper little guy. His name is Copper. He's really cute. I love him a lot. How's your dog?
So. My dog's great. She's on a play date right now, so because she could not keep quiet. Me and Kara are both proud dog moms. She's been a dog mom a little longer than I have. I just adopted my dog. It was March 13th, Friday the 13th, 2020, like right as everything was shutting down. We're like, what's happening? And I remember I had to rush to the shelter because they were like, I think we're going to close early today. And it was a Friday. And thank goodness I went and got her. My dog's name is Butterbean, and she's a deaf dog and hilarious. And I think I might only have deaf dogs. She's my first dog on my own outside of my family. So I don't know. She's awesome.
She is. I've hung out with her before. You weren't invited.
Well, that's often how it goes.
I'm going to be nicer to you.
Well,
but you know, I have a dry sense of humor, and sometimes it is not clear that I am making a joke and just teasing people. So being mindful.
There you go. But I just view it as continuing the tradition of God just bullying me mercilessly.
Well, don't give me the ammo.
Mercilessly. We would fight and stuff as kids, but we always pretty much got along. We liked each other.
We pretty much got along. Yeah, you're pretty easy to get along with in general. I'll say that. You're the kid where when all of us siblings are stuffed into the back seat, you're the one who has to sit in the middle because the rest of us are slapping each other.
And
you have to separate us. You're a human barrier.
Exactly. I was always, you know, placed, like you said, like I had to sit in the middle. I always had to be the one to keep the peace. Not
you were
so much actively, but just in not contributing to it.
Right. Well, you're a nice, sweet young lady.
That's nice. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's what I tell everybody about you.
You are too, but what I'll say is you're tougher in a way. Like you're definitely a very, like I think you have beautiful vulnerability and you have a very good heart, but you're a little bit more no nonsense, I think.
I would agree.
I was going to say, okay, so you know who I always point to when people like who know me but don't know you or they don't know us together. I always point to Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street. You're definitely Bert and I'm Ernie.
Right. I use the same example. I think that we had talked about that in the past. I'm sure we have. And I recently met someone who knows you that I had never met before. And they thought I was you, which has happened a lot. But they thought I was you. I cleared it up pretty quickly, figured out what was going on. She asked, she was like, well, you know, how are you and your sister different? And da 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 da, all these questions, this line of questioning. And I was like, oh, well, I always make a joke and say that we have a Bert and Ernie relationship. And she stopped dead cold. And she said, you know, they're not siblings. And I was like, well, I didn't mean it like that. I meant that our personalities mirror that sort of dynamic.
Definitely. And maybe she was alluding to, you know, there's always been this implication that perhaps Bert and Ernie were gay or intended to be gay. And that's, I don't think that's ever been, I could be wrong. I don't think so, but I don't think that's ever been like confirmed, but that's what a lot of people, that's how many people view it and either like it that way or, you know, some stupid people don't like it that way, but maybe that's what she was thinking.
Oh yeah. That's definitely what she was insinuating. And like, I understand that she believes them to be a romantic couple and that's fine, but she was just making sure that I was aware.
Right, right. And I love them either way. And I'm such a huge like Sesame Street, Jim Henson, Muppets fan. And I think it would be cool for there to be gay characters in that universe. Once again, I don't think those characters have ever been confirmed that way. But yeah, I always think about just kind of the straight man to, not the straight man, because Bert's funny too. And like you said, you got like a drier sense of humor and maybe a little bit more sarcastic, but I definitely can be too. I don't know.
Yeah. People who don't know you, but know me, when they ask me to describe you, I say, well, she kind of has the personality of a Muppet. She's kind of like a Muppet.
I love that. That makes my heart soar. But yeah, I'm a Muppet, but I'm a deep Muppet. What Muppet would I be?
You're a deep Muppet? What is that? What's a deep Muppet? What's a deep Muppet? What does that mean?
Like
a Muppet. Oh, that you have depth?
Yes!
I thought you meant like the B side of the record, deep cut, deep track. No one knows about it.
Oh, that could too. A very obscure Muppet, you mean?
I think of the Muppets as having depth.
They all do. That's what works about them, is they're so personified, but very specific.
My favorite Muppet I'm inserting this year is Janice.
I was going to say, I love Janice.
She has the best one-liners. Help me describe her, because she's not one of the main cast.
So she is the sole woman in the Electric Mayhem, the band of the Muppets. And she's got this like blonde, yellow, really stringy hair. Her eyes are always closed. And she's got those great lips.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like I'm like attracted to her. Hey, she's an attractive Muppet. But the best, you're right, she has the best one-liners. Because in all the Muppet movies, or a lot of them anyway, especially the older ones, there will be like a crowd scene where it opens up and there's chaos and everyone's like, oh, I can't believe what's going on. And then it gets quiet. And she didn't get the memo that it was time to quiet down. She's always saying something kind of scandalous. Like I remember there was one, forget which, it might have been Muppet Caper. I don't know. It was one from a long time ago. It's always like, and it gets quiet. It's like, and I told him, I don't care. I'm not taking my clothes off for anyone, even if it is artistic. That wasn't, I butchered it, but that kind of thing. She was always saying something kind of out there for children's entertainment.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're glad you're here. If you're listening, which if you're hearing this, you must be listening, I guess. Yeah. Stupid. Shut up. Okay. Thank you. I'm self-directed.
I'm glad when you do it.
I do it for you. Yeah, I take care of it. Today's episode's going to work a little differently. Maybe I would describe this episode as being just slightly more autobiographical. Our theme for today's episode is... I don't have sound effects. Could you tell that was a drum roll?
It sounded more like an episode of The Body. Bodily, I don't
some kind
know.
Of some kind of breakdown of function.
Yes.
But today's theme is twins. And so what happened was we decided on this theme, and every week we're going to pick a different theme, and it's going to be something random. We try to keep it kind of broad because we want to leave it to each other's interpretation of that word and how to find a story and research it based on how we interpret that word in either the realm of pop culture or in various native cultures. So we went away and did some research, and Kara has her story. Mine, I don't know. I found this cool story that I wanted to cover, but as of right now, at least, I really don't feel like I can do it full justice. I just feel like I didn't have the resources and materials and research behind me, despite my best efforts. I just feel like I didn't get enough information that I felt like I could really, really trust to do it justice. So hopefully I'll get to tell that story in another episode, but we'll see what happens. And I might like talk a little bit about it. But yeah, we're going to talk about Kara's story, and we're going to talk about some other things about twins and some pop culture stuff, but we're also looking at it through a native lens. So you want to get started?
Yeah. Interestingly, the story that I want to share today on the topic of twins, I feel like this story in a strange way actually found me.
Oh.
Like it really just kind of fell at my fingertips, and I'll explain why. Quick content warning regarding the story that I am telling in today's episode. I'm going to tell the story of a specific set of conjoined twins who were exploited for that reason. And I'm also touching a little bit on the subject of an untimely death. So please be warned before you listen to the next chunk of the episode. Please feel free to skip ahead if you feel sensitive about these topics for any reason. So you and I, and maybe this is like the phones listening to our conversations, we had discussed on the phone what should be next week's theme, and we had decided on twins. And no sooner do I end the conversation with you, I'm kind of just strolling on Instagram.
Scrolling or strolling? I heard strolling.
I definitely said strolling. I meant scrolling. It's a stroll.
I was walking on my phone.
So I was scrolling on Instagram, and just because of things I'm interested in, I'm a bit of a classic film enthusiast. So I came across this post and immediately, you know, recognized it to be a piece of film from maybe the 30s or the 40s. And when I looked, I saw what definitely appeared to be a set of twins, but it took a second look and read the caption of the picture or the video, and realized, oh, these are conjoined twins appearing in this movie. And so I got curious about them and looked them up. So I had never heard much about them before I dug into my research, but today I want to tell you guys the story of Daisy and Violet Hilton.
Oh, I don't know them, but I thought you were going to talk about somebody else. But tell me. Daisy and Violet?
Daisy and Violet, yes.
That's flower names, cute. Okay, cool.
I did not even notice that.
Wow.
Good job.
That's what I'm here for.
Alrighty, so Daisy and Violet Hilton were born in 1908 in Brighton, England. Like I said, they were conjoined sisters. They were born to a single lady named Kate Skinner, who happened to be extremely poor. She was surviving working as a barmaid. So your next question might be is, how were these sisters conjoined? I know that's a general curiosity. A lot of people don't know what to think about conjoined twins. It just so happened that their bodies were fused right at the hip and they didn't share any bodily organs. It's widely believed that they would have been very easily separated in modern times. But again, this is 1908. And actually back then in England, no set of conjoined twins had lived more than a few weeks. So they were the first to actually survive.
Can I just say, I remember when being very young, maybe like 4 or 5, and there was a magazine at our house that did a story on conjoined twins that maybe were a few years older than us. And they had a whole like several photos of them. And I remember being really confused, but fascinated with having to be connected to your sibling constantly. And I remember us being really, really curious about that. And like, what would our lives had been like if we had been conjoined?
There are actually a lot of photos of them online, if you get curious and kind of want to see. Which that feels a little weird for me to steer people to do, go stare at them. But yeah, so when you see photos of them, it really honestly looks like they're just kind of standing back to back, a little bit shoulder to shoulder. And their clothes are very obviously tailored to adjust for where their bodies are fused. Their mother's employer, the lady who owned the bar where she worked, decided that she was going to take them in. Her name was Mary Hilton. And she really did this not to sort of, you know, adopt these two children and become a nurturing mother to them. She saw an opportunity to exploit them.
Oh, no.
Yeah. At first, when the girls were little, Mary had taken Violet and Daisy to the bar and basically stuck them in a corner and let people pay pocket change to see them. So that's how she made her first coins from them, which is
awful. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. And then when they were about 3 years old, Mary and her biological daughter decided to take them on a tour around the UK and called them the Brighton United Twins. And then the tour, of course, it grew in popularity, so they expanded to other countries like Australia. There, Mary actually linked up with a guy named Meyer Myers, which, that's, you know.
I never mean to bash anybody's name. I wish someone would have told his parents, hey, that's a little redundant.
I kind of like that. I kind of like
when you like it.
Okay. I would never do it, but I think it's interesting. It's memorable. We'll say that. Unique.
It's true.
But anyway, that's the only compliment that I'm going to give this guy.
Okay.
Is on his name. So there she linked up with Meyer Myers, who actually ended up marrying her daughter, who was tagging along.
Her biological daughter.
Her biological daughter. Yes. So Myers took on the role of booking manager for the girls. Myers immediately told Mary Hilton that he needed to get the girls to the U.S. and exhibit them there because he just saw, of course, a lot of lucrative opportunity. So they, as soon as they could, they picked up and went. And the Americans went crazy for Daisy and Violet, and they were pretty much an overnight success. And it's said that once they were here in the United States and elsewhere, when Violet and Daisy were not touring and doing shows, Hilton and Myers actually kept the girls at home under like strict lock and key. And their reason for this is they didn't want them seen out and about in the streets, you know, running errands, because they thought that would wear away at the novelty of their condition.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And if someone saw them down at the local candy store, no one's going to want to pay to see them if they're seeing them for free, which is so disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, when Daisy and Violet were in their early 20s, Mary Hilton ended up passing away. And this left Meyer Myers in charge. And he completely took over every facet of their tour. And things got really shady really fast. So he took over total control of the money. And they had the girls rehearsing various instruments. They were actually really talented. They did all kinds of like dancing, really became well-rounded as far as performing. But if they were made to practice for hours and hours on end for their little act that they did. And if they didn't act or if they didn't practice their routines, Myers would physically beat them.
Oh, God.
Horrible. I like how last week I said, I need some levity. And here I go. I just thought their story was really interesting. Anyway, so when the girls reached about 23 years old or so, they decided that they had had enough and they ended up filing a lawsuit and they won. And so they got control back of their careers and they got a little chunk of their money back. But really, I mean, oh, and this is interesting too. I really got a sense from a lot of the things I read about them is that they did not realize because they were, you know, basically kept in the under the stairs like Harry Potter. They didn't realize how famous they were. So ultimately, the girls did not realize how much money they had actually earned. They didn't get to keep, but they did, like I said, get a little chunk of their money back from that lawsuit. But ultimately, they won their freedom. That's the most important thing. Once they stopped doing their sideshow circuit, that's kind of the thing that they were working in before, they made a pivot and went to vaudeville. Do you mind if I explain what vaudeville is, Kaylee?
Please, go for it.
That is an older reference, so yeah. Less people, I feel, would know what that is. Sure. So if you don't know what vaudeville is like it's like a type of theater from long ago where it was basically like a touring variety show with all kinds of performers. You would have actors, magicians, dancers, singers, all kind of come together and do their little act individually, or they'd have like a little trio or something. Is that a good description, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah.
By the way, mm-hmm. I have this fantasy of seeing my dog do a tap dance on a vaudeville stage. Not really, but like she's still, and she kind of goes tip, tap, tip, tap. And then the crowd goes wild. Sorry. That's my fantasy.
That's fine. Your fantasies look a lot different than mine. I'll say that much.
Keep going.
All righty. Mine include Leonardo DiCaprio. Anyway. Just kidding. So yeah, so they join these vaudeville tours and seem to be enjoying it from what I could tell. They had a dancing act and they also played, you know, different instruments like I mentioned earlier. But there was a lot of evidence that at this stage in their lives and their careers, they were really kind of grasping at and exploring their own individuality. I'm sure that's something that they had longed for up until this point. Because, you know, of course, they were dressed the same throughout their lives, given the same hairstyle. And this period, while they were doing vaudeville, they started wearing separate outfits. And they weren't trying to match. They each cut their hair, you know, kind of just really started expressing their own selves a little bit more, which I love. And I hate that, you know, that had been robbed from them for so long. Mm-hmm. That's something, sidebar, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of twins actually long for that. I know we do. I mean, absolutely. we're not cut from, you know, the same cloth, I'd say. I mean, you know, there's some clear similarities between you and I, Kaylee, but, you know, we're two different people.
Yeah, and it's just like anybody else. Would you want to be forced to mirror anyone else in your life for the rest of your life? Like, no. Everyone deserves their own individuality to be recognized.
Exactly. But yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that, I'm sure, before we're done with the episode.
Sure.
In 1932, Daisy and Violet actually ended up traveling to Hollywood, and they made their movie debut in a film called Freaks, which is the...
That movie is so scary.
Have you seen it?
I think I started watching it and I couldn't continue.
I've never seen it. I almost wonder, I'm not sure, you know, I've never watched American Horror Story, but I think there might be some that, you know, they did that one season,
yeah,
where it was
freak
like
show.
I think either they completely took, there's fans of American Horror Story screaming right now, like wishing like they could tell me what the whole thing is about. I've never seen it. But anyway, so there might be like a little thing there. Anyway.
It had to have been at least inspired by. Yeah, no, Freaks is a really iconic movie that's had a very, or maybe you were going to talk more about it, or?
I mean, not so much. I've never seen it. I definitely want to see it. Now,
yeah, it's definitely very notable and unique, and there's something so eerie about it, you know. But I'm easily creeped out, and anything where people are being like exploited. I mean, I think I could be wrong. Part of the film was to point out the exploitation and to really humanize the people who were being exploited.
That's what I read about it. Yeah, definitely a lot of the folks that you see in the cast are the people that you would sort of find at your typical circus, sideshow, freak show type of thing of long ago.
Yeah.
So it's definitely about all of that. But anyway, that was a bit of a breakout for them. They ultimately only were in the movie, from what I understand, about 10 minutes. You know, not a huge breakthrough, but, you know, a tie to Hollywood nonetheless. An interesting side note about when they were making the movie is, one day, and this is a story I read in a few different spots, they had gone to the movie lot. They had gone to the commissary, the cafeteria, to have lunch, and F. Scott Fitzgerald was there. And I know most people obviously know him as an author, you know, The Great Gatsby and everything. But he actually had a contract with MGM Studios for a time where he was, you know, serving as a writer for some films there in the 30s.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. which is really cool. And I need to find out which movies he actually worked on. I don't know if he had any specific association with Freaks. With Freaks, yeah. But anyway, apparently he had wandered in there to have lunch with some folks, and he had spotted the Hilton sisters from across the way.
I'm sorry, when you said the Hilton sisters, my mind immediately Paris and Nikki Hilton.
That's hot. Sorry. I'm sorry.
Keep going.
That's terrible. Anyway, so he had spotted them in the cafeteria and kind of took a look at them and realized that they were conjoined. And apparently this upset him so bad that he ran outside and threw up.
What?
Yes.
That's fucked up, F. Scott.
Yeah. And some of the accounts I read too mentioned other people that were there. I'm not going to get into their specific physical attributes, but apparently they were all kind of seated together in the cafeteria. But yeah, it's sad. But I'm not going to make any excuses for that. But I mean, to vomit is obviously a strong reaction.
Well, too, obviously it's a unique situation. It's not something that most of the general population becomes directly affected by. But it's just like anything else that you can be born with or as that's out of your control. And I know it was a different time, but it is just so disgusting when you see these blatant displays of disrespect or dehumanization. And yeah, I mean, it's just like any other condition or set of circumstances that it's out of their control, and they're exactly. just people. They're people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm somebody who has always pretty much enjoyed F. Scott Fitzgerald, but that story made my made me sad.
Yeah.
Made me sad. So after that, you know, the movie, like I said, didn't exactly make them into stars. And they went on with their lives, I guess still performing, it seems. And they were dating men and having relationships, which I'll get into a little bit. So after the movie came out, Violet was actually engaged to a fellow vaudevillian performer. And they had gone to apply for marriage licenses. They actually had to go to multiple states because they were repeatedly rejected.
Mm.
And the argument was made is that this man is trying to commit bigamy. He's trying to get two wives for the price of one. That's why. God. Yeah, I know. And from what I can tell, this seemed to be like a legitimate relationship.
Yeah, I mean, they're once again, like, I feel like that's often, and I'm kind of speculating because I'm not a conjoined twin, and so I can't speak from experience, but I feel like that's often the main curiosity that surrounds being a conjoined twin, is how do romantic relationships work and things like that. And I'm not gonna get too into it because once again, I can't speak from personal experience, but once again, it's no, like, just because you have this condition of being conjoined to your sibling doesn't mean that you don't have romantic desires, sexual desires, and of course you're going to desire and maintain relationships. And that's really gross that they got discriminated against.
Right. So unfortunately, in that case, because what was happening, because, you know, Daisy and Violet had a reputation, they had a name, people knew who they were. Every time Violet and her man went to try to get their marriage license and it would be rejected, it would wind up in the papers. And that caused this guy a lot of embarrassment. And it got to be really frustrating. It seemed that it would never come through. So he ended up breaking up with her and leaving.
No.
Yeah. So a few years later, in 1936, Violet actually got married. But a lot of the places I looked into, it was sort of at least assumed that this was a sham marriage that was arranged by her agent as a publicity stunt, which is terrible.
Stuff like that happened all the time back then, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For all kinds of performers, famous folks, it was weird stuff from the PR people.
Yeah.
But so the marriage was actually annulled a few days after they got married. They were married for about 5 seconds.
Right.
And the public apparently, like, saw right through this, and they were like, hey, that was a stunt. We don't like that.
See, we smell a stunt, a bit of trickery.
And sadly, what happened is like that really soured public opinion about them.
Oh no.
Yeah, you know, I people don't like the wool pulled over their eyes, even though it, like we said, that was a lot more frequent. There were a lot of sham relationships and things going on back in the day.
Right. Also, like, who cares? You know, like, who?
Yeah.
Celebrities do all kinds of stunts, and PR people do all kinds of stunts. Like, it didn't hurt anybody.
Right. Yep. So in 1941, Daisy actually got married. And there's a few different theories about that marriage. A lot of them echo the same that happened with Violet, where it was probably a sham, but they ended up only being married about, or they ended up being married less than a month. So both were really short lived and both ended up staining their public image. So their popularity really was fizzling out at this point. They did end up making a second movie in 1952. I believe it was semi-autobiographical, if not I believe it was semi-autobiographical, but I'm not entirely sure. But the movie actually ended up flopping. But they'd still tried to use it to try to, like, salvage their career. They were trying to take momentum from it. So they would actually go and make appearances at drive-in movies that were showing that movie for, like, years afterwards. You know, back in the day, and this is actually still true of the remaining drive-in movies, they would show movies for years at a time. Like, you know, they would, like, movies would almost go on tour to different cities and stuff after they were, you know, after they had made their initial run. So throughout the years, the sisters actually took on a lot of little business ventures, and they kept booking appearances, like I said, at drive-ins and different things. And in 1961, Violet and Daisy at this point are 53 years old. They made their last public appearance at a drive-in movie theater in Charlotte, North Carolina, of all places. Hmm. So yeah, they made their last appearance there. And the reason why it was their last appearance, I swear these girls cannot catch a freaking break.
Oh, shoot.
Their tour manager just up and left them with nothing. Okay. And I mean, nothing.
Okay, that's bad, but I thought you were going to say they were, like, tragically killed or something, and that's why. So, so like, that's almost a relief, but also terrible.
Well.
Oh, God.
No, I'm not laughing at that. So they made that last public appearance at a drive-in in Charlotte. So he left them with nothing, no money, nowhere to stay. They had no family, no friends, nothing. They're in a place where they don't know anybody there. So the town, and maybe they were staying in like a, because if you don't know, Charlotte, North Carolina is a pretty big city even back then in the 60s. So maybe it's like a little suburb or something. But the town they were in actually took some pity on them. And some local folks gave Daisy and Violet a little trailer to live in. And a local grocery store owner wound up giving them a job. So they were working at a grocery store, doing different things. I think maybe they initially got hired because the guy was selling like a twin bag of potato chips or something.
What? Okay.
And they would make an appearance in the store and handing out potato chips. Not sure.
Right. Doing the, what do you call that?
Oh, like a spokesmodel.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they worked as like cashiers. And I think I might've read that they worked in the produce department, but yeah. So a lot different from the fame that they had known previously. I thought an interesting thing that I read about their time at the grocery store is apparently they would perform their old routines from like their vaudeville days for their coworkers during their break. Can you imagine that?
That would be very bizarre.
Yeah.
And probably kind of sad.
8 years later, the sisters were still working at that grocery store, and it was noted by a lot of the locals that they barely ever left their house, which is super sad, except, you know, obviously to go to work. They opted to live in this sort of solitude. One day in early 1969, they did not show up for work, and the police went to their home to do a welfare check and found them deceased.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm questioning now why I picked this story. It's so sad.
Yeah, but it's interesting.
It is. And I think it's important to know the stories that have been forgotten.
Yeah, it definitely is. Like, these women deserved their humanity that was robbed from them time and time again. And I think it's good to hear the human side of their story instead of the sensational side of their story.
Right. So just a fair warning, this next part regarding their death is a little bleak. So,
oh no,
bear with me.
Okay, what is it?
Well, I'll just try to deliver it as softly as I can. It was determined that they had actually contracted a certain strain of the flu that I'm not familiar with. And I've heard of this happening in other cases of conjoined twins of the past. But Daisy had actually died first. And it was estimated that Violet died 2 to 4 days later.
No.
Yes. And like I said, unfortunately, I have actually heard of that in another case of conjoined twins of, I believe, about the same era.
That's awful.
Terrible. Yeah, terrible.
God.
So they wound up, they had a simple funeral and they were buried in a donated plot in Charlotte. So there's my lightness. I said I was going to talk about something like Barbie. So that's the story of the Hilton sisters, the original Hilton sisters.
Pre-Paris and Nikki.
Yeah, so sad. Such a tragic story. So this is what I kind of wanted to circle back to with you, Kaylee, is just to kind of talk about like the fact that these ladies were exploited their whole lives and made into something that was just made into a sideshow attraction. It just seems like the world just kept letting them down. They never like caught a good wave of good luck, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately that seems to be the case of a lot of these people that ended up being exploited for whatever reason. And actually I was going to point out in these same circuits of sideshows and all these terrible entities that existed back then and probably in some places still exist in certain ways, and even exist on TV. Like a lot of like TV shows now almost feel like they have that same kind of exploitative vibe. But I was going to say, so in addition to, you know, we hear about conjoined twins, we hear about like bearded ladies or strong men or all these different common things you would find in a sideshow. But another thing you would often see at these sideshows were Native Americans, and they were basically kept almost like animals and forced to wear specific things, whether they were accurate to them or not. And I've read that they would make the Native people, you know, reenact different moments in history, like reenact battles and stuff like that. And mostly it was just like, come and look at the Indian. And the same is true of like of African people too. They would collect people from Africa, tribal nations, and tour them around and basically dehumanize them as well. And I'm sure there are probably other examples that I'm just not as familiar with as well from other cultures. But yeah, it's such a gross time in our history, but I think there's still remnants of that even now.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about, you know, the whole connection to Native folks and people of color being exploited. I hate that old world exploitation that, you know, still exists. So in a lot of modern day cases, I've known some people who kind of exploit themselves in a sense, or their culture, or...
Yeah, definitely. We see this a lot with, I mean, particularly Native people, because there's still this fantasy and fascination with this idea of what Hollywood crafted an Indian to be. And I've seen many people in my lifetime, unfortunately, glom onto this for a chance of individual financial gain. I don't know that many people get rich off of it. Maybe some people do. I don't know. Yeah. I saw a quote the other day that I thought was just fantastic, and I wish I could credit the person who said it. It was actually a comment on an Instagram post. And the post was photographs from the Capitol riots, and it was all photographs of Black people that were attending the protest along with these white supremacists and in partnership with these white supremacists. And it was just really sad to see. And one of the comments underneath I saw that really stuck with me was someone said, what was it? Something, I might not get exactly right, but it was something like colonization leaves some concussed. Where it damages you, but you might not even know the damage is there. Right. And so I try my best. It's very frustrating. I get angry at those kind of things, or someone who exploits their culture for gain at the detriment of their culture. But at the same time, I try not to judge, because that's the system was successful. The propaganda was successful in that circumstance. And it's, especially when you're maybe struggling or dealing with hardship, you're looking to survive, you're looking to whatever, I don't know, but I try not to judge, but I hate it at the same time. But I try not to hate the person. I try to understand right. that it's colonization. And yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of glad you talked about conjoined twins, because I hadn't even thought about that. And I've never known any conjoined twins, but I imagine there's lots of difficult things that come with that, a lot of stigma, but also I'm sure there's a lot of benefits as well. And it's very, very different being a non-conjoined twin, but people often ask me, what's it like being a twin? And I always say, it's great having a twin. It sometimes sucks being a twin, especially more so when you're growing up and really trying to find yourself and express yourself as an individual, and the world just wants to see you as one of two. That was what I wanted to explore this week in my story, was some legends about twins in various Native cultures. I read a lot, but I just really wanted to do the story justice, and just feel like I couldn't get in the amount of time I had, I couldn't get one source that I thought was that really would help me serve the story best. But it is really interesting to hear how society views twins. And I always felt like when people would recognize that you and I were twins growing up, they would stare, they would point, they would make comments. They would, once again, not to the level of what Violet and Daisy experienced, but I often felt dehumanized. Like people would make fun of us for being twins, and people would make gross comments or really make us feel like it was something to feel different about. But it's interesting to hear how different cultures view twins. And a story I was looking into specifically on the topic of twins was the Navajo or Diné story about the monster slayer twins. It seems like there's actually several, and I'm not Diné or Navajo. We're Waukamasuan, by the way, is our nation. I don't think we've mentioned that yet. But I've often heard that twins are regarded very highly, specifically in Diné Navajo culture, because there's several stories about these hero twins who slayed monsters, and seems like they, in the stories I read, it was very kind of coming of age where they were trying to establish themselves and maybe even find some purpose, and they ended up slaying all these monsters, and they're really heroic, and it's really cool that there's two brothers, and it's cool to hear about their origins. And feel free, if you're not familiar with those stories, to do your own research. I'm going to keep continuing to look into that story, because I want to learn more about it. But yeah, it's interesting to see how some cultures see twins as something unique and celebrated in a way that's not exploitative, and how other groups or cultures, let's point and look at the freaks, you know?
Yeah. I have a specific memory of once, and maybe you'll remember this. You probably will. Of a time where, I mean, it happened our whole lives. And I just want to point out, in case we haven't mentioned it, I'm sure we have, that we are fraternal twins. But Kaylee and I do look very similar. A lot of people do get us confused if they're not, you know, super close with us or anything. I personally don't see it. I don't think we look that much alike.
we have a resemblance, but the thing is, when you're a fraternal twin, you don't have the same DNA. So you have the same genes, like you have the same genes, just like you and your other non-twin siblings or non-multiple siblings have the same genes. So really, when you're fraternal twin, it's any reason that you look like is just family resemblance, and also the fact that you're aging at the same rate.
Right. And don't you love when people ask us if we're identical or fraternal, and
oh, yeah.
we say we're fraternal, and they say, no, you're not.
Exactly.
You're identical.
Like, either that or people say, like, so many times people say, oh, and Kaylee or Kara has an identical twin. Like, no, I don't.
Yep. But really quickly, the story I was going to tell is, do you remember that time in high school? It was like the first day of school or something like that. And one of our friends, we kind of caught up with her, and she had made like a brand new friend. That's just how she was. She's like a very open, friendly girl. She made a brand new friend on the first day of school, and she brings us over to introduce us. And the young lady who we didn't know, she's chatting with us. We're, you know, making small talk. And all of a sudden, she goes like white as a ghost. And she goes, wait a second. And we're just kind of like, what's going on? And she's like, are you guys twins? And we said, yeah. It's kind of crazy how long it took for her to even like question it or notice it.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as we confirmed it, she was like, oh my God, no, I can't see twins. Twins freak me out. And then she like held up her notebook in front of her face and like shielded us from her sight. Yeah. Like, wow, that's an interesting reaction to have. It's like, it doesn't feel good when someone holds up a notebook in front of their eyes to block you from their view.
See, I can't physically look at you. But yeah, I remember that. I remember once there was a girl in middle school who was determined to find the differences in our faces. People were always obsessed with that. Well, how do you look different so I can tell you apart? And I remember once a girl grabbing my face, like grabbing me by the chin and turning my head so that she could get a better look at my face. And it was so infuriating and violating. But of course, I was so mild-mannered. I always say I'm like a Thomas. And by that, I mean, if you have seen the movie Smoke Signals, like I'm very mild, like in the way that Thomas is, I think. And so when I wanted to, you know, maybe punch her at her face for grabbing my face, I just kind of let it happen, which hopefully I'm stronger now and would stand up for myself. But yeah, stuff like that is just so annoying. And I think we experience it a lot less now that we're older. We're usually around older people and who know better. And also we're not, especially with the pandemic, we're not around each other really. We live in different cities, so we don't get to see each other that often.
Yeah, we just see each other over Zoom, really.
Really, yeah, these days.
Yeah, so I know this used to trigger me when people would say, hey, Mary-Kate, where's Ashley? Like,
God.
That annoyed me. And so I was so angry at Mary-Kate and Ashley specifically for years, even though they did nothing to me. I don't know them. But recently I've started like watching like interviews with them as adults. And they're, you know, these are several years old. But I'm like, wow, if you actually listen to them, they're saying the same things that you and I are saying right now. They have their own individual ways of life, their own individual sense of self, personality. Like I always just assumed they were content to be the quote Olsen twins. And that is something Kaylee, I'm sure you feel the exact same way as I do on this. I hate being called the Morrison twins. It's not my favorite thing. I like to be called by my name, Kara.
Yes. Yeah.
And even if you accidentally call me Kaylee, I can forgive that. I don't like to be called the Morrison twins.
No, I always hated that too. Or people with, hey, twin and stuff like that. Like, that's not my name.
Yeah.
The thing that I always felt like, because you and I were both very quiet in school. And the thing I always felt like people would identify about us were two things. And it was that we were twins and that we were, at the time, as it was known, Indians. And because, I mean, we definitely had some Native kids at our school, but we grew up, we didn't grow up on a reservation. We didn't grow up with a huge Native population, but there were a few Native kids. But when you were a Native kid, you kind of stuck out because there weren't a ton of you, you know? And so, yeah, people were always asking questions about being twins, about being, once again, Indian, as we all said back then in the 90s.
Yeah, we really got dealt a double whammy on that one, didn't we?
Well, the thing was, it made me, especially not having other, or at least a lot of other role models that were twins or other role models that were native or whatever, it led me to a point, and you know, people always kind of making comments that that just didn't feel good. It led me to a point of, like you said, with Mary-Kate and Ashley, like resenting things. And like, it hurts me to even admit or even reflect on those times in my life where I did feel embarrassed of being a twin, and I felt embarrassed of being native, and it made me resent certain things that made it feel like when I would see native people or twins on TV, like Tia and Tamara, sister, or if I would see natives on TV and then kids around me would make fun of them or whatever, it just made me feel like these things that people pointed at me as being different for were being put out there for it to be brought even more attention. And actually, I was going to mention, so we've gotten so many compliments on the name. Like I've had so many conversations with people who really dig the name Twindigenous, which I take credit for, but I can't take entire credit for, because what inspired that name was when we were in college, we found out that there were people who we knew, unbeknownst to us, were calling us the Twindians behind our back. And I don't think it was done maliciously, but it was very insensitive. And when I found out about that, the person told me like, oh, isn't this cute? And I was like, oh yeah, I kind of played it off. I think they wrote it to me on like Facebook or something. And I was like, oh, it fits. But really like hating it, because I just didn't want, because these were non-native people. It just didn't feel good to once again being told I stuck out in a way that, because there's so many misconceptions about twins and misconceptions about natives. And it feels like most people, especially back then, would go to the default of these untrue, inaccurate things. And so it didn't feel good to have people who weren't either of those things really pointing them out. So yeah, I feel like we reclaimed the name, gave it more cultural respect. So
absolutely
happy about that.
Yeah. And I will give you full credit on that. You came up with that one yourself.
It came to me in the night. No, I don't remember how I thought of it, but.
Yeah. So I'm glad we could kind of talk a little bit about our experience as being twins ourselves. It is a bit of a unique experience that not everyone obviously can relate to. And, you know, if anyone, I don't want to discourage anyone if they have questions about it to ask us, I suppose, right?
As long as it's done respectfully.
Right. We don't need to be asked, if I punch your sister, can you feel it? Because the answer is no.
If a simple Google search can answer it, then
any mystical questions you might have regarding twins and twin powers, we don't have that.
No, I think we share a genuine bond, and I think you and I have characteristics that make us intuitive individually, but I've never felt that. But I don't know, other twins might feel different.
That's true. Yeah, we're only speaking for ourselves here, and same goes for when we speak on our native experience as well. It's just our individual, our own thing. So, but yeah, I'm glad we could talk about it. Glad I could share the story of the Hilton sisters. And definitely, if you're curious about them, go look it up. And I forgot to mention, Kaylee and I have long worked in theater. So I'm sure a lot of our theater friends who might be listening will notice, if they're like a musical person, there was a Broadway musical based on Daisy and Violet, I believe in like the late 90s and early 2000s, called Sideshow, I want to say. But yeah, go research those ladies and learn a little bit more about them.
Yeah, and you know, you can read more about different twin legends and native culture, various native cultures. I wish I had more information for us all today, but I'm going to keep looking at it. Maybe we'll touch on it next time. Maybe we'll go to the next theme. We'll let you know, but I'm glad we were able to kind of give our perspective as native twins today. But yeah, thanks for joining us for episode 2. Once again, if you would like to stay updated, you can follow us on Instagram at Twindigenous Podcast. You can email us at twindigenouspodcast twindigenouspod@gmail.com. We also have a Patreon set up, and that's patreon.com/twindigenous. Go ahead and subscribe, like us, follow us, give us a rating and a review, and yeah, share. Please tell people about we really want to keep doing this and make it work, and we need your help to do that. So, and we appreciate it. So thanks for being here, and thanks for supporting and sharing.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of people who've already listened to our first episode, whether it's folks we know or new friends. We really appreciate it. We're keeping an eye on that. So thanks, guys. Thanks for coming along on the journey with us.
Yeah, love y'all. And we'll see you next time.
Alrighty.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.